Hello, it's Shahid and welcome back to another Creative Flow Awards podcast. Our award show is open and the next entry deadline is the 10th of March. Full rundown of dates can be found on thecreativefloor.com/awards. So today we chat to the lovely John Reed, Executive Creative Director of Syneos Health, and we are talking about a project called Double Take, which launched at New York Fashion Week last year. It's an absolutely brilliant piece of work. This episode will really help anyone in a creative department unlock the superpower of being a facilitator. Yes, that sounds very strange, doesn't it? But anyway, when you get to that piece, hopefully it will make sense. I think other aspects of this episode will really help anyone out there who wants to know what being part of culture looks like and what it takes to get your work into it. Another thing that I think will really benefit anyone listening to this, regardless of where you work, is the power of never doing something before. I really, really enjoyed having this conversation with John. I hope you get something out of it. Please do subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast to make sure that you don't miss out as soon as each new episode drops. If you want a shout out on any of our episodes for any open roles in your agencies, or you want to get your production services into the ears of the greatest creatives and agency communicators in the world, get in touch with us at awards@thecreativefloor.com. Anyway, let's get on with it. Sit back, relax, or go for a walk. Whatever you do, strike a pose. Enjoy. Hello, and welcome back to another Creative Flow Awards podcast. We are joined today by the wonderful John Reed, Executive Creative Director of Syneos Health. Hello, John.
Hey, what's up, Shane?
Long time listener, first time caller.
Oh, no, it's great. Well, where are you calling from today?
I live in New York.
Cool. What's the weather like?
Cold today. You know, it's been a funny year for us. We haven't really got the snow, but today is cold. But who knows? Tomorrow, maybe 55 degrees. Who knows?
Yeah. It's a bit like over here. It's like really up and down and freezing. So I'm in London, obviously, if anyone can tell by our accents. Not that we're sort of playing to any cliches or anything. It's really great to have you spend your morning with me today. So we're here to talk about some work, which is kind of what I think most of our listeners really want to kind of listen to. And I saw this particular piece of work, I think it was last year on LinkedIn, and it just kind of blew me away. I just thought, oh my God, I would absolutely love to get behind that and see how on earth they did that. So this is a remarkable, remarkable piece of work that took the pharmaceutical industry into New York Fashion Week and even got into Vogue. We have links to the work in the show notes, so please do check out the work. I think that you'll probably make more sense of this conversation if you haven't seen it. This was a collaboration called Double Take with Genentech and OpenStyle Labs and the Spinal Muscular Atrophy SMA community to create a first of its kind fashion show. John, I'm not going to sort of give too much away. I've obviously looked at the work. I don't know the backstory, so we're all going to be looking at this and learning together. I would just love to get behind the very beginnings of this project, all the ups, all the downs, how on earth you and your team did this, and just all the things that I guess you wish you would have known before the project, because I think they're potentially could be some incredible learnings for all of us about to embark on similar incredible campaigns. So thank you, John. And yeah, please take it away.
Of course, man. Yeah, thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here. Genentech has been an amazing partner for the SMA community. They really wanted to do things that are different, you know, really kind of get their folks out into the world. And it's all about disability visibility, right? So, you know, when I first came to Syneos, they already had this great relationship and they were in the middle of a bunch of great things. And the first project we worked on was a thing called Spaces, which I think you know about, but it was a song that was kind of with crowdsourced lyrics from the SMA community. And, you know, we had James Ian, who had SMA, he was the singer, and we shot a video and did all this stuff. And anyway, it was great. You know, it was one of those projects that was kind of a bit of a dream. You know, what does a creative guy know about shooting a music video?
Well, you look like a bit of a rocker.
Thank you. Yeah, I fake it well. But you know, this project was amazing. You know, it was one of those rare opportunities where it was cool. It was music, all that stuff. But really, it just impacted lives and the community. It really caught fire in the community and really did good for them, you know, and all that. So, Genentech is buying good ideas. And so our biggest challenge in year two is how do you top that, you know? And so, of course, we're like, well, let's do a fashion show. You know, how do we get, you know, the SMA community, you know, more visibility in these places where they haven't had it before? And, you know, for those of you listeners who are wondering what SMA is, it's spinal muscular atrophy, which is, it's a really horrible, horrible condition. But it's a neurological disease that, you know, if you're born with it, you know, your chances of survival are pretty low. Like, it's the most common death in infants, you know, if it goes untreated. Sometimes it presents itself later in life. But the community, you know, your muscles atrophy, right? So most people are in wheelchairs. And it isn't just like, oh, hey, look at, you know, they have smaller arms and legs and they can't walk. It's, you know, the muscles inside that like control your breathing or your eating. You know, it's just this horrible thing. And so the challenge with this audience is, you know, when they go out in public, they don't feel seen or heard, you know. So we really wanted to come up with a campaign that kind of puts them out front and center, you know, for us, by us, you know. So that's where the spaces, music, the song came from. And then obviously number two is like, the fashion world is so showy. So it's hard to describe, but, you know, it's very couture and very exclusive, if that makes sense. You know, there isn't a lot of...
It's very look at me, isn't it? Obviously, like, fashion shows are there to kind of disrupt your senses, right? And kind of just take creativity to another level. So,
but much like the music video, like, yeah, what does an agency know about a fashion show? So we had the grandiose idea that we really wanted to, in an essence, hack New York Fashion Week. You know, how do we make our own fashion show? And
what came first, John? Was it like your teams or yourself just saying, why don't we do a fashion show? Or what were their real insights in terms of saying, well, look, you know, if you're living with this condition, actually wearing clothes is kind of limiting because there isn't really much made for, you know, maybe people who've got slightly different body proportions or aren't able to use certain parts of their body. I mean, what came first? Was it the idea, or was it the problem, I guess, the challenge?
It's the problem for sure. It's the insight. I mean, the fashion show is kind of the champagne cork popping, you know, the moment where the world sees it. But really, it really was about the fashion industry. And, you know, there's some people that are making clothes, like Tommy Hilfiger is doing a good job because it's personal to him. He's got some family members with disabilities and things. But, you know, in reality, you start talking to this community and you realize, oh my goodness, it isn't just about the size of the clothes, but it's, you know, the adaptability of it. Like, you know, you lose a little bit of your dexterity, right? So like doing buttons is hard. So we were finding cool ways to kind of, you know, rather than buttons, you have magnets, or, you know, they need increased mobility with their arms to be able to get behind, to get the zipper up, all of these great little things, or the things that you and I take for granted, like, oh, hey, it's cold today in New York City, I'm going to throw on a jacket and run out the door. You know, they can't just do that. So we were trying to think of ways to have a fashion that was accessible and easy for them to use. Cause, you know, a lot of folks, you know, you talk to them and there's a lot of stories about the challenges of just finding clothes that fit, you know, because of their small stature. It's, you know, a lot of times they're buying kids clothes, but they don't fit. And, you know, there's just a lot of challenges there. So we started off with the problem. And so, of course, before we even thought about the fashion show, we thought about who's going to be our partner to help, you know, design clothes. So you mentioned it in the upfront, but we partnered with a group called Open Style Labs here in New York. They're in Brooklyn. They're an amazing group, and that's all they do. They think about fashion from all angles and accessibility and all of that stuff. So basically we got with them, and they have a group called The Fellows. And I was explaining it to somebody, and they said, oh, like, they're students. These aren't students. These are accomplished designers that have gone to school. They have their degrees. They just have these programs with these fellows that are now learning how to take the skills and tools that they learned at a Pratt, say, or a Parsons or the New School. And they, are now applying it to, you know, disability, you know, people, you know, different challenges with mobility and all that. So, you know, we brought in 11 people from the SMA community, and we partnered them up with fellows. And so over the course of about 6 weeks, they worked together. at the beginning remotely, but then over time we brought them together physically in Brooklyn to kind of talk about their challenges and their wants and desires. And it wasn't just like, oh, hey, my dexterity is bad, I need magnets for the jacket. It was like, man, I want to be a rock star. Like James Ian, for example, the singer of Spaces, he was a model in our show. And he, you know, he made this awesome like salmon suit, and it says his name on the back. Like they got down into the details of like, hey, I want rhinestones on the back. And I, you know, and it was really cool. Like, it really just showed off their individuality and personality and clothes that they'd never, you know, they'd never been able to do that before. So it was very powerful.
Yeah. Cause he's the guy with the magnetic jacket, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And he's, you know, in the SMA community, like there's, or in SMA, there's different levels of it, right? I think there's, it goes from 0 to 4, and he's in the middle range. So he can still kind of walk. Like, you know, when he shot the Spaces video, it's hard for him to stand. You know, he's a musician. So, and he plays guitar, and it's hard to stand and play guitar. So, you know, for the fashion show, he could walk down the runway. So he, you know, his challenges were different than someone else that's say in a wheelchair or, you know, further along in their progression, you know?
So what year are we in, John, when this whole thing kicked off?
Let's see, what is it? It's probably 2020, I think, is when we first started, when I first started working with Genentech and the SMA team. And, you know, it's been an awesome journey. Like it's the agency at Cineos is a PR agency called CCA, which is Chico Chandler and Associates. And they've been amazing. They've had this relationship forever, and the client loves them. And, you know, it's funny, the dream between you and me, and now all of your podcast listeners.
No one's listening. It's just you and me.
The real magic of any program successful is having you obviously have to have the ideas, right? It's really about having a client partner who wants to take risks and do something cool and interesting, and leadership obviously at Genentech who will approve these kind of out of the box ideas, and leadership at the agencies that want to push for that stuff too, because this could have easily just been a website, you know, or something. And you know, there's really a really great team at CCA that helped bring this to life. And
so what was the actual sort of initial ask then? Was it just to raise awareness of SMA? What was the initial brief?
Well, the you know, Genentech works with a lot of communities, and they partner with this community called SMA My Way, which is really the epicenter for all things SMA. I mean, this community is tiny but mighty, you know, like they're vocal, they're a fun group, they're engaged, they have self-deprecating humor. But the epicenter is this program called SMA My Way. So yeah, it was to just raise awareness for it and kind of make things for us, by us, by the community. You know, like I wanted to step out of the way and let them shine. It wasn't like, hey, look at the agency's ideas. It was like, hey, let's put them front and center. So it's, you know, them telling their story versus us trying to tell their story.
Just out of interest then, so when you sort of found the insights around this community, the challenges that they have with the weather and clothes and all those sorts of things, was the idea to always host New York Fashion Show, or was it initially just to come up with a range and then New York Fashion Show kind of just was like, just came along?
That's a great question. A bit of both, I think. You know, like I said, it started with the music video and the song the first year, and we generated so many different ideas. What if we did this? What if we did that? And so for us, it was kind of like a sequel to that, if that makes sense. And so we had this idea of a fashion show kicking around, but we wanted to do something for us that just featured all SMA folks. So, you know, in that second round, hey, how are we going to beat Spaces? It's like, we think this is the way, and we kind of blew it out. And it was really nice because we were dreaming big. And, you know, in the beginning, it's rare when a project, you know this, you know, half the ideas die or they get watered down. And so when something comes out and is as good or better than you originally envisioned it, that's magic. And this is one of those projects, you know.
So did you have to go into some form of market research before they sort of gave you the money to do this? Or did they just say, nope, love it, do it?
Well, the great thing about these guys is they're so vocal. You know, we pulled together a focus group and we just talked to them about their challenges. And of course, fashion is top of the list. You know, a lot of them are fashionistas and, you know, all that. So, you know, that rose to the top. So we did, I wouldn't say we did traditional strategy sessions or like long focus groups. You know, we pulled them together, mined them for insights, and, you know, we got the vocal group and, you know, even kind of seeded some, hey, what do you think of this? And of course they all loved this idea. And, you know, everyone raised their hand. Like when we were asking for participants, we don't call them models because they're not models, you know, they're real people, but you know, everybody's hand went up and everyone wanted to be a part of it because there's such a need, you know?
That's a really great sort of learning though, I guess, that we could perhaps apply to more everyday client work as well, right? Of actually sort of collaborating a lot more with our audience. I know you came with ideas to them, but I'm sure, and you can correct me if I've got this wrong here, but I'm sure the ideas kind of got moved, they got pushed, they got maybe co-created with working with them, and you were kind of all, I guess you were one creative department, right? Within that session, it wasn't like we're the creatives and you're the patients and you're just going to be, you know, putting your thumbs up or down, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, no, co-creation is a great word. I mean, I even think I like to say that they really created it. You know, we just facilitated it, you know, but the conversations we had with them, I mean, they're just full of ideas. And you know, like I said, it's a super vocal, creative, awesome group of people that are, you know, always looking for opportunities to kind of have their voice be heard.
I'm sort of midway through this season's podcast and we're covering a lot more work. And the real theme that I'm getting from the most interesting pieces of work that we're talking about, and I obviously include this as one of them, is where the creatives are almost, as you say, facilitators. They're not saying that they have the answers to every single problem, but actually they're almost humble enough to know that we don't have all the answers, but obviously we know how to craft execution and we kind of have gut instinct and we kind of know how to use data and insights. But I think maybe having a slightly more open mind of saying, well, I'm going to be more of a facilitator within whatever the challenge that the client has. And actually part of that skill set, I would say, the modern way of being a creative is then putting in those different perspectives and then almost like knowing how to knit them together to whether get your story out or to kind of get your execution out or what is your PR angle or what is the service model that you're going to be doing. So I think even while you just using that word just made me go, oh yeah, okay. I think I've sort of now started to connect a couple of my podcasts together in terms of if there are any young creatives out there, like, of course, you know, focus on your craft, focus on what it is that you do. That's fantastic. One skill set that I think perhaps some agencies would benefit from is this mindset of sometimes it's a really good skill set to say, to be humble enough to say, I don't have the answer, but I'm going to facilitate these different minds and kind of get something really interesting. So anyway, spitballing there with you.
No, it's great. You're exactly right. You know, and I'm really lucky. We were really lucky on this project in that, you know, we had the relationship. They'd already bought some good ideas and it was easy to kind of come in and we knew the community. We weren't just coming in, you know, totally blind. And also, this isn't traditional pharma. Yes, it's Genentech, but this is a PR program, right? Where, you know, it's the community-based thing. It's not branded pharma. So we didn't have to worry about all the legal stuff and the ISIs and the rounds of review. Yes, there were still rounds of review and approvals and things, but you know, it just felt like it was easy to make something for them, by them, that didn't have to feel like you're selling something, you know, it just feels pure and real, you know?
So you've got around a table or you've got in a room with these patients, you've got this idea, everyone's very excited. And then I guess, how did you find OpenStar Lab? Were they just an obvious partner or not? How did you get hold of them?
Yeah, definitely an obvious partner. I mean, we've known about them forever, right? Just being in this space, you know the players, right? And there was a lot of ways we could have gone. You know, we could have gone to, you know, Parsons or you know, schools of design, you know, or a lot of different places like RISD or something. But they just felt like they felt right. You know, we met them and their mission aligned with our mission, and you know, it was just great. And they had the fellows program, and it just felt like a hand in glove, like a natural fit, you know.
That's cool. So you said that they basically took 6 weeks to spend with these SMA volunteers for the project. What did you learn from that? Because that's quite a long time, isn't it, to be working alongside people?
Yeah, no, it was great. I mean, what I learned, I mean, my hunch was that they were all going to love it and really want to kind of be part of it. And they did. And they had multiple touch points with them, you know, and the fellows would do sketches that, you know, they'd first have conversations with them. And for us, it was really about, you know, fashion shows are funny, you know, like I had never obviously made a fashion show before, but I had done a lot of research. Obviously I watched a million of them on YouTube, you know, to kind of get the vibe of it. But normally a fashion show has a theme, you know, like, hey, this is the fall collection and we're embracing blue. For us, we wanted to just, you know, host this authentic, inclusive show that embraced their differences. So we wanted to make each person, have each person have their own style come to life, if that makes sense. So each of the fellows got to know the people one-on-one. And so it was more about individuality. So that was a really fun part where, you know, some people went over the top in a great way and some people were more subdued. And, but those conversations were awesome to kind of watch happen. And, you know, the fellows did sketches and they brought out swatches and you know, cause the, SMA community is all over the country. So a lot of it at the beginning was, you know, over Skype or Zoom. And then towards the end, we brought them together. And that was the, for me, one of the best moments outside of the fashion show is bringing them to Brooklyn and then the fitting, you know, like trying on these clothes that, you know, everybody has their own challenges, you know, like there's a guy named Scott who's from Wisconsin and he's always cold, you know, he's in a wheelchair and he's always cold. So he wanted a blanket, you know, that he could easily put on, but he's also a designer. So he, on his blanket, he wanted his own design, you know, just, it was amazing to see those people kind of finally see their garment. And, you know, of course, it's like any chaotic, you know, fashion show thing. They had to tailor it on the spot and try to get it right the first time. But it was fun to kind of see their eyes light up when the 6 weeks of work kind of is, you know, alive in front of them as this, you know, piece of fabric that they're going to.
That's amazing. So the clothes basically reflected the person's personality, right? I mean, that's basically what, yeah, wow. Oh my God. That's really interesting. So I guess each of the patients had quite a huge influence in terms of colors, the material, how it was cut, right?
100%. Yeah. They all kind of, you know, I love blue. I love red. I love sequins. You know, I want shoes that fit. So one of the participants is named Shane Burklaw, and he's really great. He and his wife Hannah have a channel on YouTube. It's called Squirmy and Grubs, and he's got, you know, like a million followers, and he's kind of like the guy. He wrote this amazing book, by the way, I'll plug him here, called Laughing at My Nightmare, which is so good, but it's about having SMA. One of his biggest challenges, I was just chatting with him, and he said one of his biggest challenges is finding socks, you know, which sounds so weird, but, you know, because of the atrophy of his muscles, you know, he still has a regular size foot, but is, you know, the socks will fall down. And so he and I were kidding around about starting an SMA only sock brand, you know, but we designed all this stuff for him that, you know, fit his frame and his style. And it's, if you guys, you know, if the listeners go and check out the show, he's got this awesome, like purple kind of velour or velvet kind of suit, you know, it's very stylish. It's almost like a smoking jacket, but he looks great, you know, so.
It's quite interesting, isn't it? Because obviously clothes are very personal to us. And I guess the relationship that these people have with, you know, everyday clothes that we all take for granted is going to be very different. Was there any particular moment that you can remember where it was just like, oh my God, these clothes have kind of like gone beyond just covering these people?
Yeah, I think it was that the first fitting, like they were just so overwhelmed. And I, you know, those moments, it's rare in what we do. You know, sometimes we like the moments where you're sitting there and it's really real and you kind of feel the hairs stand up on the back of your neck. That's when you know you got something special. And that time when, you know, they show up and you literally have the moment where you brought out the dress or the gown or the pants and kind of just see their face light up. And, you know, because it isn't just about, oh, isn't this a cool pair of pants? It was like, they co-created this thing. And, you know, the other moment is, I think, and we'll probably talk about this in a minute, is the actual fashion show. You know, these people aren't models, you know, they're just regular people living with SMA. And so that was a whole nother level of like, and you're going to have to go out onto a catwalk with this on, you know? So that was another moment, like standing backstage and kind of having the hairs stick up on your neck as the music plays and the first person walks out.
Let's take a quick break. We have a quick shout out for Boom CGI, be it CGI illustration, animation, post-production, VFX, or creative content. Boom's team of unique artists are passionate about turning those technical words into emotive content. They have a little motto, and it goes like this: good ideas aren't born quietly, There you go. Boom. Boom are great friends of our show. So do check out their amazing work at boomcgi.com. At what point did you know that this was going to be at New York Fashion Week?
Well, that's the big thing, right? Like, we wanted to make sure that it was seen and heard, you know, like, we didn't want to make a fashion show that, yeah, we did a thing, you know, we wanted to go as big and wild as we could. So we, you know, I was telling people, you know, we hacked New York Fashion Week because we wanted to plan it during New York Fashion Week. And I'll probably get the days wrong, but I want to say that we did it like 2 days before. Like, we did our show on a Wednesday, and I think New York Fashion Week started on a Friday. And, you know, we invited all the press. No one on our team had done a fashion show before. So, you know, trying to figure out how it all works. But, you know, you invite the press and, you know, they all showed up, you know, because they were thinking about Fashion Week. You know, we had to kind of fish where the fish are. So it was the timing was perfect.
Did you have to do some practices with them? Like, or was it just freestyle on the day and they just sort of went and did it?
Well, so it's funny, much like the music video, like, we wanted it to be great. You know, obviously I didn't want it to feel like some high school presentation. You know, the team was really big on like, let's hire the best, let's bring in the pros. And so the team brought in Lynn O'Neill, who's super famous in the industry. Like, she's put on the biggest shows for all, you know, some of the best designer brands. Matter of fact, there's a funny story about Lynn is there's an episode of Sex and the City. You know that show, but there's an episode where Carrie Bradshaw's on a runway and Margaret Cho plays like the producer of the show. They based Margaret Cho's character on Lynn. So that's a kind of a funny insight, but she was phenomenal. Like, she had this amazing vision and she had done it before. She knew about the space and how to kind of get everything right. And I was just really impressed with her. And, you know, cause she's, you know, if you want to make a movie, you go to Hollywood. If you want to do fashion, you bring in Lynn, you know, it's like one of those things.
Okay. So we've taken 6 weeks, got some incredible outfits. They're very much connected to these people's lives and their personalities. And it's been quite moving. I think one of the things I never quite appreciated about fashion, because anyone who knows me knows that I just wear the same clothes. but I remember random now, but I remember being at art school and one of my mentors, tutors, she was very much into fashion and taught fashion. And I remember there was one time and she just sort of talked about mental health and confidence and how fashion was more than just clothes. And it, as your designers have sort of demonstrated, it's all about the personalities. But actually there is a huge amount of confidence that comes with clothes. And I just can't imagine the difference that these items made to these individuals. So I'm sort of going back a bit now, but we'll get back to the fashion show. But just when you start talking about, you know, the hairs on the back of your neck, it just sounds pretty incredible. So they've got their clothes. You've got Lynn on board. Then what happens?
So, of course, we wanted to do it during New York Fashion Week. So we had to like find a space, right? oh my goodness, the drama there of just, you know, New York is packed because everyone's got their show already and everyone wants to do the, you know, the Gucci show or whatever. So luckily we found this amazing space on Fifth Avenue, kind of by 30 Rock, you know, and it's funny that the fashion shows really are these big empty vessels, these halls, and then you go in and you set them up, you know, you have benches for 200 people usually. And the one interesting thing that I didn't know is most fashion shows are only about 8 minutes long. You know, it's quick.
Oh, I'm right.
Yeah. You just go out and you do the thing. And so, of course, we had a little bit of a challenge with our, you know, our folks have some mobility challenges. There's wheelchairs, there's canes, there's things. So we knew ours was going to be a little slower. And I think ours ended up being about 12 minutes. But yeah, we got the space, you know, invited the people, you know, you invite press and you kind of hope that they're going to come. And what a moment for me that was pretty phenomenal. It's kind of like a birthday party, right? Like, you send out the invites and you're kind of waiting for the doorbell to ring. And so we had set it up and I believe it was like 9 a.m, you know, it was early. And, you know, I was there at like 5 a.m, so I'm super early helping set up. And, you know, at about 8:30, I'm like, oh man, when are the people going to start arriving? And I kind of looked out the window and there was a line down the block of all these people. And it was just the moment of like, wow, they're, you know, people are here and they care and they're going to come. And matter of fact, we had more people than we could handle, I think, you know, like it was packed to the rafters. So we were really pleased. And that's when we knew we kind of had something special again, like that, you know, people showed up.
Okay. So you've got people queuing up around the block. Where were you? Are you backstage at this point or are you in the audience? Where were you?
I am everywhere. It's funny. I wish that I could have been like just enjoying it, but you know, that where they say, the cobbler's kids have no shoes. I don't know. Like I was too busy to enjoy it. You know, I had a camera crew there. We were kind of documenting it all. Cause to us, it wasn't just about having the show, but we wanted to tell the story of it after. So, you know, we had a camera crew downstairs backstage while people are getting ready, while they're getting dressed, while they're getting their makeup on. And so I'm running around, you know, we were all running around. It was pretty manic, you know, but in a good way, but, yeah. The only time I got to enjoy it was afterwards when I watched the video of it, because I was literally everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, it is incredible, and obviously we've got the links in the show notes. But I mean, it is a properly done fashion show, you know, and they all look fantastic. They all look amazing. It's on for 12 minutes, and then once the whole thing's over, then what happens? I mean, do people then just move on to the next fashion show, or do they everyone just hang around and start meeting? Patience, but what happens, something like that?
We had a bit of a Q&A after, you know, they did the show, everyone walks out and does their part, and everyone was awesome. They were so good. Matter of fact, if you watch it, there's moments that you can just see the confidence, like they're glowing, you know. And then at the end, of course, Lynn comes out, you know, she's as the producer, kind of comes out and does the, you know, they do the walk where they all kind of come out at once and they kind of get the standing ovation, which is cool. But then we actually had a little bit of a round table discussion where like four of our participants came out, Open Style Labs came out, and they kind of talked for about another 10 or 15 minutes just about the process of designing and all that. And, you know, everybody stayed, everyone was glued to their seats, kind of hearing the story about how it all kind of came to life.
Again, I think that's a really brilliant learning for anyone listening to this, because again, like we do a lot of round tables, right? Especially if you're in a kind of med ed space. I'm sort of going a bit random now, but actually sort of building some form of memorable experience, that kind of, it's almost like that anticipation of like, I now really want to find out what it was like from the patient's perspective, what it was really like from the designer's perspective. And so I think again, like round tables, we do that day in, day out, right? And they tend to be creatively pretty straight. So again, obviously this is on another level, but it's a good learning in terms of like hosting something a little bit more special beforehand. Could be really cool.
a little bit different. Yeah, I mean, it really did feel like it was, you know, for them, for us, by us, by the community, you know. And like there, it's funny, there's a term, and I don't know if you've heard this term before, but they use this term a lot in this community, inspiration porn. Have you heard that term?
No.
So again, this community, they're a little snarky and they kind of, you know, they have a good funny bone, but yeah, they use this term inspiration porn where they don't want people to feel sorry for them, or they don't want, you know, people to create work that makes them feel better, but it doesn't help the community. You know, if that makes sense, like there's just a lot of things like, oh, let's put a kid in a wheelchair and it makes the people not in the wheelchair feel good about, like, it's not about that. Everything that we're doing for this community is really for them, by them, to kind of lift them up and be seen in these spaces versus, you know, making able-bodied people feel, you know, feel like, oh, I feel good because I'm seeing them do something. It isn't about that. You know, it's about this community.
Even when you look at some of those clothes, though, like you kind of there going, actually, I wouldn't mind a jacket that had a magnetic clip rather than a button. And some of those colors and some of those suits were just really fantastic. It's not, they're just brilliant pieces of fashion that you would want yourself as an individual, right? Regardless of, you know, who's wearing it. So I think it's interesting. Thanks for sharing inspiration porn. I'm going to be hashtagging that.
they will love it. But yeah, it's just about having respect for the audience. And like I said, we just wanted to do something kind of, I wanted to be wallpaper on this thing, you know, and let them kind of have their moment and shine. And we're just, and you know, you said it earlier, and we're just helping them, you know, we know the craft and we're just kind of giving them the platform. So that's kind of what I'm most proud of, is kind of their reaction and the community's reaction. I mean, one of the best things is we live streamed it on Shane and Hannah's YouTube channel. And so their YouTube channel, I mentioned it earlier, but it's Squirmy and Grubs. Check it out, listeners. It's pretty awesome. But we live streamed it, And they had the comments turned on for it, and reading the comments were phenomenal. You know, just the community, you know, because this is a big group. It isn't just the 11 people that are out there walking. And it was, you know, it's just, it makes you feel good that the community is connecting with it and so engaged with it. Like, you know, there's an immediacy and a almost tactile. I know it sounds weird, but like, you know, you're just in it and they're just seeing it. And it's great to see them kind of experience it and be so vocal about how excited they are about the things that, you know, SMA My Way is doing in Genentech.
It's just a one-off, right? You didn't do it again. This was just like a one-off show, right?
It was one thing, but there was a whole program behind it leading up to it. You know, as we were doing the bits with Open Style Labs, we were generating content there. You know, we were filming these little interactions and some of the conversations between the fellows and the participants. And so a lot of that was, we put that on social. So the idea was to kind of ramp up to the show through social so that like I said, the show is kind of like the champagne cork popping. It was just one of those things where like, that was kind of the, I wouldn't say the end, but now it's like, you know, there's always something, there's always a buzz or a hum going with us and Genentech in this community. But you know, now the challenge is, what do we do next? You know, how do you top it?
How do you top that, John? How do you do that?
Oh, you'll find out next year.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. Well, look, I just want to congratulate, you know, you and your client and everyone behind this, because there's clearly a load of talented people, and you've made a huge difference to these people's lives, and I'm sure that's an experience that they will, you know, obviously live with them for forever. And I think, again, like, we can go into this too. I imagine a lot of the patients on the runway also came along with friends and family. I mean, did you get an opportunity to maybe hear it from their perspective as well, like of what this has done for them as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that kind of goes missing, I think, and if any clients are listening to this, I think this is something for them to think about as we think about marketing plans. I think that the caregiver voice is oftentimes missed in what we do for a living. You know, it's such a crucial piece because they are there. They may not have, you know, insert condition here, but they're there helping the person they love and care for along the way. So, you know, that was an important piece to this. You know, like in the fashion show, there's a mother-daughter combo, this little girl, Celine, and her mom's name is Amber Joy. Celine, I think, is 4, just this beautiful little ray of sunshine. And she's actually, you know, there's a story, you know, this, the press picked all this up, of course, but there's a story, I think, on NBC News with them. But she's, Celine bucked the trend, you know, like when you're, like I said earlier, this is the most common death for kids if it goes untreated. You know, she made it through, and she's just a little cherub of a child, you know, glowing face and just this, you know, little ray of sunshine. So, but her mom is, you know, is the one that takes care of her. So her story was just as important to kind of talk about all those things of them growing up, you know, of her growing up and all the things she has to do. So, you know, for the fashion show, it was like dress up time. You know, she was having the time of her life. And so those, it was those little stories that really kind of got to me, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I just really loved the sort of juxtaposition of the whole thing too, right? Because fashion is generally seen, and we obviously, you know, it's a lot, gives you a lot of confidence. There's a lot of mental health benefits behind it, but generally the perception of fashion is that it's quite superficial. You know, it's all kind of over expensive clothes that are kind of impractical, that, you know, there's a lot of fakery behind fashion. So I think what I loved about this was there was so much meaning behind it. And the fact that the whole thing's called double take, it's like, well, God, look again. And there is, as you know, there is so much depth behind each of those pieces, each of those people's lives, each of their stories, and even as the community. So that's what I really, really loved about it when I first, you know, I think it was on LinkedIn when I first saw it.
You didn't read about it in Vogue? You're not a Vogue?
I'm sure. My wife did, no doubt. I think I saw it on LinkedIn, and then of course I, you know, clicked on the Vogue link, and I think you had it in the in People as well, right? Didn't you?
Yeah, it was in People. It was in a lot of places. I mean, it's funny, for what we do for a living, you know, it's nice when it shows up in Adweek, which it did, and you know, all the pharma publications like MM&M and Fierce Pharma and all these ones. But to me, you've really done something special when it kind of breaks through and shows up in Vogue and People and is on the evening news. I mean, that's when you really know that it's kind of touched a broader audience and kind of, you know, you've done something good. You know?
Let's be honest, no one cares, right, about anything that they see from a commercial or advertising point of view. So trying to do something that kind of at least gets somebody to care enough about putting it on their news channel or writing about it in their editorial or their magazine, it's give me a reason to care, right? I think that's one of the sort of learnings, if anyone's listening to this and they may be struggling to get anything out there that's sort of newsworthy. And this kind of is a wonderful example of giving anyone a reason to care. I mean, how would you not want to share this or talk about it or give it as an example of just world-class communications, right? I mean, the interesting thing about this is that even though it was on the news and it was on Vogue, people wouldn't necessarily assume that this has come from a healthcare pharma specialist communications agency, would they?
Right. No, exactly. You know, we weren't trying to trick anybody by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, like I said, we just tried to step out of the way and give them the voice, which is the thing that made it special, you know.
Completely. So let's talk a little bit then about what happened after. So the show ended, everyone is talking about this, everyone, you know, you're getting into Vogue, getting on the news. What impact are you feeling that it's having with your clients, with the patients, and even yourselves and your teams?
Yeah, well, I think it's a great, for me personally and for our teams, it's just a great example of, you know, when you have a great idea of how to push for it. And I don't want to say don't compromise, because there's always going to be those things. But like, you know, like I said earlier, it could have been so much less than it was if it didn't have, you know, and this isn't me, this is the team, you know, like, you know, I'm the one talking to you, but behind it, there's, you know, a ton of smart, great people that really brought this to life. But it's to really push and kind of think outside of the box and not just kind of do the things that you know, and don't be afraid to stretch it. You know, like, it's funny in communications, you know, I've always believed, you know, if you can dream it up, you'll find a way to make it work. It's just the way that it goes. Like I said, I hadn't shot a music video before. We dreamed that up. We found somebody and we made something beautiful. Never done a fashion show. We found great partners, pulled it together. So, you know, my advice to like young creatives, I think, would be to, you know, don't be afraid. Don't go like, I don't know how that would work, so I'm not going to present it. For the clients, it's about really inertia. You know, like, the first thing they bought was good. It learned that, hey, I can take risks and buy interesting ideas. And so, you know, the second idea of this fashion show they bought. So, you know, they want to keep that momentum going. And it isn't just like, oh, hey, we made this cool thing. It's really about impact in this community and really kind of embracing them and making it for them. You know, I'd almost say Genentech stepped out of the way too. You know, it just feels like it's honest and real.
Yeah. Do you think it was a risk? Because you talked about how, you know, you sort of pulled in the community and you almost like co-created this idea of the fashion show. So even just from that perspective, I mean, would you still think it would still feel like a risk, even though you've kind of co-created this with the community?
I think the risky part comes in it being an event and not necessarily being like a trackable, measurable website with analytics and banner ads and emails, and they say, hey, we reached X amount of audience. You know, there's all of that. A lot of clients just care about that kind of stuff. And so the idea of an event is a little scary to them, right? If it's not tangible. Of course, we had all those other pieces too. Like I said, we had social that led up to it, and, you know, it drove to SMA My Way and all that stuff. But yeah, the risk is just like, you know, it's a little bit of like, talking to the community, we knew it was going to be successful and we knew it was going to have impact, but there has to be a little bit of the trust fall with the client that it's all going to be okay, you know? And it's tough when, you know, when clients have, you know, budgets and they have numbers they got to hit and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, kudos to our client. Like I said, it started with him. He was amazing. He's a bit of a, in his past, it's funny, he was a great client for us in that he's a musician, in his past, and he was also a bit of a model. So you can see that both of these ideas we had with him, you know, he wanted to buy those and make them, And so he was the perfect partner for us to kind of bring these to life. And he was in there, like, for the Spaces song that we wrote. He was in there playing piano and stuff. Like, he was a real partner. Like, he was creative, you know. It was just a cool organic process. So
I guess, yeah, you're right, because it's a live event, so anything can happen when it's live and you're dealing with, you know, 11 people, I guess. So that's probably a wonderful place to conclude. And, you know, just, I think you probably have one amazing client there. I mean a client that's kind of playing in your music video. That's pretty cool.
We need more of those kind of clients, you know, a creative client that's willing to kind of partner with you and take risks. You know, you convince them that, hey, this is going to be good. They see its value and they see what it can be. And we just need more of those in our industry.
But that sort of goes back to sort of some of the earlier things we were talking about too, right? In terms of how modern day creatives are kind of the best facilitators. And that's not to say that you can't get your clients involved in terms of like being part of that creative process. As creatives and as agency people, we all know if your client feels connected enough to an idea, or that, you know, they kind of feel like they've sort of even come up with it, they're going to fight for it as much as you are, and they're going to feel as hurt as you are when it doesn't go anywhere. So I think that lesson of sort of maybe feeling and being more of a facilitator, knowing how to handle all these different perspectives and embracing it too, I think was a really wonderful thing that I personally got from this episode today. I think we all talk about how advertising, when it's done well, can be part of culture. And I think a few people can roll their eyes when they sort of hear that. But I think if anything sets an example of what that could look like and what that could mean, this is it, right? So I think I'd like to thank you for demonstrating how our world can impact culture. I think it's just a world-class example of what that means and what it could look like. And another thing that I really got from this, John, was you kept repeatedly saying, I've never done a fashion show. I've never done a fashion show. I've never done a fashion show. But isn't that wonderful? Isn't that one of the sort of greatest things about our job, is that just because you've never done something doesn't mean you can't do it. And you sort of ended it towards the end of the conversation about just dreaming it. Just dream it, then make it. You know, it's okay to dream. It's okay to sort of not be an expert in every single idea or every single dream. And I think if that's one thing that I think, again, our audience will take away, it should be that. And I don't mean that to be cheesy, but that's kind of our job. And just a massive, massive thank you for explaining what inspiration porn is. So
you're welcome for that, Shaheen.
Yes. So thank you, John. And congratulations again to you and everyone who's part of this amazing collection. And I just cannot wait to see what you do in part three. So yeah, do come on and when that's all done. And yeah,
no pressure.
Yeah, no pressure at all. Anyway, thank you, John.
Right on. Thanks, Shaheen.